Welcome to Wine for Normal People, the podcast for people who like wine, but not the snobbery that goes with it. I'm your host, Elizabeth Schneider, author of the Wine for Normal People book and certified wine dork. Podcast is sponsored by Wine Access. Do you know Wine Access has a refer a friend program? So if you are part of the Wine Access Wine for Normal People Wine Club, or you are a customer of Wine Access, you can go to wineaccess.com/WFMP and check out the referral link program at the bottom of the page. When you refer a friend, you get $50 and so do they. Check it out today. It's a great way to spread the news about Wine Access. Go to wineaccess.com/normal today. Now let's get to the show. So I know that I have been very Italian heavy lately. We did the Dolcetto podcast, and I'm teaching the White Wines of Italy class coming up, which if you haven't registered, especially if you're in the UK or EU time zone, you should get on that, because we only do a couple of classes that are going to work for your time zone a year, and that is coming up. But I was thinking about Fiano because, well, there's a number of reasons. The White Wines of Italy class will be tasting it. And also, I've started to talk to my partners, Heather and Beppe at Turissimo, about the patron Campania trip next year. And it has such great memories for me. I had such a wonderful time when I went there. And Fiano's home is really in Campania. It's a wine that I adore. On Patreon, we were talking about our desert island wines. And I said that Fiano is one of my desert island wines. It's hard with Riesling, Côte Rôti, maybe some Brunello. It's tough. Aliatico? I don't know. There's so many. But anyway, Fiano is definitely up there. And in terms of white, it is right up there with Riesling for me. And that actually makes sense. As you will see later, it actually shares some characteristics of Riesling. I am talking about patron trips. I am talking about classes, which a lot of patrons take, and you get a discount off the classes if you are a patron. So I got to do some patron shout outs, and then we will get to the show about Fiano, the wonderful white grape. So we will thank our patrons. If you want episodes of the back catalog of Wine for Normal People, you need to become a patron. That is now a perk of Patreon. Anything except the current year episodes, which are provided at no cost because of my partnership with Wine Access. They fund that. But all of the back catalog is now on Patreon. So if you become a member, you will have access to that at patreon.com/wineforNormalPeople. And we will thank Kurt A., Drew B., William W., Daisy C., Chris B., Stefan B., Allie N., Chelsea A., Christina, Karen G., William R., David G., Dan, Jeff J., Elisa L., Haley, Ross S., Suzanne L., Keith C., David, Jamie H., William O., Dion P., Jean, Leah N., Brett K., Rob from Heathcote. Hey, Rob, I hope you're talking about Heathcote in Australia. Lewis R., Megan B., David S., Russell and Denai W. Thank you guys so much. They're friends of mine. And Heidi M. You guys are awesome. Hopefully, if you have not become a member, you'll become one soon, just like all of these lovely people who are part of the community. So let's get back to Fiano. And again, if you're interested in the White Wines of Italy class, I'll pimp that out now by saying wineforNormalPeople.com/classes. That is my website where you'll be able to register and check it out. Fiano. It is a white grape, as I said, native to Campania in southern Italy, especially in the DOCG. That's the most restrictive level in terms of yields and production methods and stuff like that. Fiano di Avellino. This is one of my favorite wines in the world. It is not heavy, but it still has softness and richness and tons of flavors. There is a huge range of Fiano. It can go from light to full-bodied. There are some sweet versions. I've never had a sweet version, but there are some. It is generally a dry wine. Some are very casual. Some are super serious and complex. Some can age 10 or more years, and they can age in a way that other white wines really can't. But at the same time, they are very delicious when they are young. And although the grape is native to Campania, and it probably shows its best side there, it's got some competition, especially in Australia, which is a distant number two in terms of plantings, but they are definitely trying to do interesting things. A tiny pocket in California and some in the La Rioja area of Argentina. There are some New World places that are looking at Fiano, and there's some very set reasons for that. It has some climate advantages as the climate changes. But let's just talk about the history. We'll go back to the Romans, of course. I mean, look, if we're in Campania, which is not too far away from Rome, we're going to the Romans. So this is one of Italy's oldest grapes, probably introduced to Italy by the Greeks around the 7th century BCE. The name may derive from Apuans, or the term Appia, which is an agricultural area. And today that agricultural area is called Lapio. And we will talk about that vis-a-vis the amazing Fiano that grows there. Now, some people think that the word Appiano derives from api, which in Italian means bees. And that's related to the fact that bees love the grapes and that it became Appiana and then Affiana and then finally Fiano. But actually, Ian Dagata in his book says there's really no evidence of this. And probably the grape that we think is Uve Appiane is likely Moscato. But then again, there is some argument about that, and we probably will never know. So we do know that the first actual mention of Fiano as this grape was in the 12th century. King Frederick II or King Federico II stayed in Foggia, which is in Puglia, not very far from the area where Fiano grows. And he was noted to have bought Greco and Fiano wines for his own personal consumption. So we know that royalty really liked this grape. And we also know that in the 13th century, King Charles of Anjou, who was king of Sicily, bought 16,000 Fiano vines and had them planted in the royal vineyard. And he ordered them planted in Puglia and Sicily, which is why the grape grows there today too. In 1661, Avellino was mentioned and the wine Appiano was mentioned. Again, that turned into Fiano. And then the Royal School of Viticulture and Enology in Avellino improved the grape. We had some phylloxera. Now, phylloxera doesn't live in volcanic soils in Campania, but in some of the more clay-based soils, phylloxera did its job in this area, and it was a problem, but it didn't completely destroy all of the vines in Irpinia, which is the wider area of which Avellino is the capital. The problem was then you had people deciding to replant, and what they were replanting with was things that were going to make them money. So they replanted with Trebbiano Toscano and Sangiovese because those would yield huge amounts of bulk wine that they could just pop on the train and send up north to be blended in with other wines from more prestigious areas. In the 1940s, we barely see Fiano mentioned, just some sporadic vines in Campania. And really, the grapes were only used to make local low-end blends. Otherwise, they might have been put into some of those bulk wines. But the problem for Fiano is that it is extremely low yielding. It experienced declines for most of the 19th and 20th centuries. Growers were just sick of it. They were looking to make money off of bulk wine. And Fiano is definitely not a bulk wine grape, which is why it's such high quality today. Like so many of the grapes. If you have not listened to the podcast with Piero Mastroborodino, you must listen. His grandfather, Antonio Mastroborodino, brought Fiano back from the dead. He knew that this was an amazing grape. He was very dedicated to the native grapes of the region and searched out grapes in old vineyards around Avellino. He made his first vintage in 1945. It was 30 bottles. That's it. Old vines, really low yields, again, because Fiano is low yielding. But Mastroborodino was dedicated, knew the grape had potential. And by the 1980s, Mastroborodino's Fiano was very popular, but other people started to notice its potential. Now, there was a big earthquake in Campania in the 1980s. There was relief money that came in. And at that point, people decided that if they had been growing grapes or their family had been growing grapes, they decided to come back because the money was available to start wineries, which is why a lot of the wineries in Campania started in the 1980s. That earthquake relief money helped people get a start. Mastroborodino had already planted that seed though. And now we have today Fiano with an enormous recognition of potential with the modernization of winemaking and equipment and the know-how and this influx of money and talent and a focus on the native grapes. This grape is very popular, and it has been planted and spread to Puglia, more of Puglia, Basilicata, which is in the south, Marche in the northeast, and Sicily, and then, of course, California, Australia, Argentina. It's very important to the idea that native vines need to be used, they need to be cared for, they need to be revived, because it is such high quality. People love Fiano, and this is something that was plucked out of nowhere, plucked out of obscurity by Antonio Mastroborodino, pointing to the idea that, yes, we can discover and make quality wines out of native Italian grapes, even if they have been forgotten. So back to those issues in the vineyard. So I'm saying that part of the reason they abandoned Fiano is because it's kind of a pain in the butt. On the positive side, it does adapt to a lot of different soil types. Even in Avellino, where there's a lot of different pockets, it shows terroir. It can adapt to cool sites and hot sites and lots of different conditions. It's a great reflection of terroir. In fact, they have done a lot of work in Avellino DOCG to do these single vineyard bottlings made in the same exact way, and then you have them from different sites to really show the difference in terroir. I have tasted these. They are so different based on the soil types. Same grape, same vinification method, same vintage, all of the same, and just different site, and you get a completely different wine. That being said, the grapes are what they are. They're medium-sized. They're very thick-skinned. They're yellow-green grapes. They grow in loose, medium to small bunches. Again, that low yield. They make very little juice because they've got that thick skin. But the flavor that they have is incredible. The problem for Fiano is that low yields made it unprofitable. Now that we have come into a new era of wine where lower yields and more artisanal wines are popular, this is a positive thing, not a negative thing. So it fell out of favor for a long time because it was hard to grow. It was low yielding and you couldn't make a lot of it. But now we're looking more at quality over quantity. So Fiano has an advantage here. It's a late ripener, and normally that would be a problem because in October, when it's picked, you start to get rains. And although it is kind of sensitive to odium, which is a kind of mildew, it is incredibly botrytis resistant, that rot, gray rot, not the positive type of botrytis, because of its thick skins. The thick skins are going to protect it from the rain, from rot. And that protection is going to also work in warmer sites. So it will be less susceptible to sunburn and shriveling and things like that because the skins are so thick. In warmer years or warmer conditions, warmer sites, the wine can be very rich, but still with acidity. That's why Australia's warmer regions are experimenting. It's hard to find a white grape that can maintain acidity and have a ton of flavor on warmer sites. The loose bunches make it a lot easier to deal with rot in rainy places as well. They don't have that problem in Australia, but in other sites, it can be an issue. A lot of people believe that the best Fiano is going to grow on volcanic soils at elevation, giving it mineral notes, lots of weight, lots of intensity. I'll get into the specifics of the wines in a second. I do want to talk about the winemaking. One of the problems before they modernized the wineries is that you had these oxidized grapes. So they tasted like a bruised apple or a brown apple. And you really need modern technology to limit that oxidation. So the goal here is to limit the oxidation, preserve the acidity, don't cover up the purity of the fruit with oak or anything like that. Usually it's vinified in a steel tank at low temperatures. They want to maintain the freshness. They want to maintain the varietal expression. If you want more weight, you can boost up those fermentation temperatures. You can let the grapes hang a little longer to get more ripeness. You can do it on warmer sites. So then you're going to be able to get more weight and more richness. The thing that most people do with Fiano, not all, if you want a lighter style, you won't do this, but there's a lot of terpenes and aroma compounds in the skins of these grapes. These are technically skin contact wines. Now, I'm not talking about months, but they might do a few days of skin contact, and that's going to make a difference in how aromatic the wines are, how rich they are. They often use indigenous yeast. They use lees aging. It's going to sit on those dead yeast cells. They will often stir the dead yeast cells just to give the wine a little toastiness, a little bit of body. New oak is usually not used at all. And if they do use oak, the barrels are steamed, much like what you're going to find with Nebbiolo in Piedmont or Riesling in Germany. They'll use it again to give that creamy texture, take an edge off the high acidity. But just to give you a sense of different winemaking techniques of a place that I've been to and I've tasted these three wines and they taste completely different. Di Meo. I love Roberto Di Meo. So he makes the Alessandra that matures for 9 years before release. 8 in stainless steel, 1 in bottle. This wine has petrol notes. It has a really rich body, hazelnuts and almonds, pear notes, delicious. Then he has the more experimental wine, the Colle de Ceri, which ferments and ages in oak. And then he matures it in the bottle for about 3 to 5 years. So it ages in oak for about a year to 15 months, and then 3 to 5 years in the bottle. This was an experimentation. He wanted to see what kind of texture it would give the wine. Vanilla notes. It's a totally different style. To me, it doesn't really taste like Fiano, but it is another expression. Maybe a little more like Chenin Blanc. Not like Chardonnay quite, but Chenin Blanc. Then he has the Erminia. The Erminia matures for at least 10 to 12 years in stainless steel and 3 to 5 years in bottle before it's released. These long aging techniques are going to give you completely different notes. And that really speaks to the character of Fiano. There's a lot of flavors. There's a spectrum of flavors. In general, you're going to have medium to full bodied wines. You're not going to have a light bodied wine with Fiano, generally speaking. What's interesting is I'm going to describe it as steely and minerally and like green apple and pear and herbs. These are all things that you think of when you think of things like Sancerre or Chablis from cool climates. And don't get me wrong, Campania has a cool climate, which we will talk about. But the thing about this wine is that it maintains its acidity regardless of where it is. The other thing is that the body of the wine is still kind of rich. You don't get these really thin, lean wines, generally speaking. A few places have it. But for the most part, you have both steeliness and a medium body, which is why I think I'm really taken with this wine. It has so much contrast, so much complexity. Typical flavors, if you go with the original style, the Mastro Burardino style, those are more like saline and green apple and kind of underripe pear, maybe herb, and sometimes a little bit of honey. They do a longer maceration, but they do a very cold fermentation at Mastro Burardino, and that's going to inhibit some of the richer flavors and richer textures. Or you could have the style that a lot of people go for, which is floral with nectarine notes and tangerine, honey. Often, depending on the site, you're going to find smoky, minerally notes. You might get some spice, hazelnut, pistachio, herbs, always with acidity though, always with acidity. In warmer climates where they're going to let the grape really hang or warmer conditions, warmer sites, that's when you'll see tropical notes. Peach, very rich, still with acidity though. Fiano always has acidity. It is never flabby unless it's made really poorly. I've never had an example where it's been flabby. I have had some examples where I think they picked it too early and it's a little too lean, or maybe it hasn't aged long enough, but never flabby. The acidity is there. Interestingly, I mentioned Riesling before. The terpenes, the aroma compounds, you should go back and listen to the aroma podcast. I totally dorked out on that in that podcast, but terpenes are similar to the petrol note that you're going to find in Riesling. Also, you're going to find fennel and acacia. And these are things that sometimes you'll find in Riesling. The acidity, the aroma, the petrol or gasoline notes with age, the huge bouquet of either flowers or fruit. This is similar to Riesling. Are they the same? No. You can tell the difference between them, but they do share these characteristics, probably why those are my two favorite white wines. I really want to talk about Wine Access and the Wine Access Wine for Normal People Wine Club. How much do I love when I get an email from somebody that says, thank you so much for including that amazing Pinot Gris from the last shipment. I love it so much. It is amazing. These are the kinds of wines that you're going to find in the Wine Access Wine for Normal People Wine Club. If you want to join, you'll go to wineaccess.com/normal. It is $150. You get 6 bottles, free shipping. It comes 4 times a year. That is going to come with tasting notes. It's going to come with a note from me about why I picked the wine specifically. And let me tell you, the process is incredibly meticulous. I make sure that the wines that we select for you are things that you are going to taste and love. I always look for incredibly typical examples so that you can learn something. I only pick wines that I love, that I feel good recommending, and that I know that you are going to learn something from. And if you don't want to join the wine club, you can go to wineaccess.com/WFMP. That is my special URL. It's how you'll get into the site and let them know that you found out about Wine Access through me. You'll get 10% off your first order, and it will open a world of amazing wines. Shop for wines there. If you hit $150, you get free shipping. Go check it out through my special URL, wineaccess.com/WFMP for 10% off your first order, wineaccess.com/WFMP. And if you want to join the wine club, wineaccess.com/normal. And don't forget to join Patreon for the back episodes of the podcast, patreon.com/wineforNormalPeople, patreon.com/wineforNormalPeople. And to sign up for the classes, wineforNormalPeople.com/classes. Now let's get back to the show. In its youth, you're going to find Fiano to be aromatic. It can have a little bit of honey note, some floral notes, citrus, pear, which I really like in a Fiano, maybe a little bit of white pepper. As it gets older, and I'm talking about 3 or 4 years old, that's when you start to see richer spice, honey, and nuts. The nuttiness really comes out. Hazelnuts and almonds, toasted notes. The hazelnut note is so emblematic of Fiano. With age, you get this really rich body. So it goes from being shy and maybe too tight, a little lean, to something very, very voluptuous and rich. It's just a fascinating wine. As it gets older, you can definitely still tell it's Fiano, but it takes up a lot of those tertiary notes like cheese rind, which I've found in Riesling before, or Petrol and things like that. And definitely those nutty almond notes. Now, people make late harvest Fiano. It's like citrus and dried figs, honey, coconut, things like that. I have not had one. They're not all that popular, but people do make them. I've even heard of people making sparkling wine out of Fiano. Where does Fiano grow? Well, obviously, I've said Italy like 500 times. So the main place is predominantly in Campania. 65% of the plantings are in Campania in Italy. Sicily has 16% of the plantings, and Puglia has 15%. The rest is pretty negligible in Basilicata, Marche, and other places. And the vineyard area is 1,377 hectares or 3,400 acres. Campania is where Naples is. We are talking about an area that is on the kind of the shin of the boot. Campania has about 900 hectares of plantings of Fiano. It is the most actually anywhere in the world. Half of those plantings in Campania are in the DOCG of Fiano di Avellino. That is almost half of all of the plantings in Campania. In the area where Fiano grows, in Irpinia, this is the specific area within. So you have Campania, and then in the internal of Irpinia, which is in the Apennine Mountains, around the town of Avellino. This is a region of southern Italy with valleys, mountains, rivers, and streams. So absolutely stunningly beautiful, really hilly, high elevation. The capital is Avellino. It's only 31 miles or 50 kilometers from Naples, but it is cut in half by the Apennines. So you have elevations that go up to 1,800 meters or 5,900 feet. That is really important when you're thinking about growing. Most of the vineyard sites are not that high, but when you're thinking about maintaining acidity, the elevation, the diurnal temperature swings, the well-drained soils, cooling winds that are coming from the ocean and then inside of the mountains too, lots of rain, lots of microclimates. And then you layer on top of that clay limestone soils for aroma, sometimes some weight, volcanic soils, which over the centuries have come from Mount Vesuvius, Mount Vulture, Mount Caserta. The accumulation of ash and mineral has given just incredibly rich layered soils, which is great for viticulture. So this is Irpinia, cool, mountainous, mild summers, cold winters, big diurnal swings. The vineyards are 250 to 600 meters. And despite climate change, you have coolness of the sites. So the wines are refreshing and generally lower in alcohol, which is great for this grape. We're going to specifically focus in on Fiano d'Avellino since most of the wines that you will find are Fiano d'Avellino DOCG. Avellino is small, and east of Avellino is where you will find most of the plantings, and most of them are around 590, 600 meters, which is 1,900 feet above sea level. This is great for Fiano. The DOCG's 30 towns around Avellino. Many of the sites are volcanic influenced, which are great for Fiano, going to give it minerality and great aroma. And soils are so important for Fiano. That's going to create big differences based on the site. There are a bunch of subzones. I'm going to go over them not so that you can memorize them, but so that you can understand the differences in terms of the qualities that each of these terroirs bring. I think that it's interesting to just hear what the differences are, not to memorize them, but just to know what they are. All right, so here are the subzones. They are a limited area of municipalities in and around Avellino. Lapio is the one that you really need to know if you're going to be a Fiano lover, because it's the heart of the Appalachian. It's kind of the reference point. Excellent diurnal temperature swings, pumice covered by clay and sand. These are really typical mountain wines. They're full-bodied because during the day it's very warm, so they're getting a lot of solar radiation, there's lots of sun, and then at night it's cool, so they have lots of great acidity. They're minerally, and then they have this like fennel, hazelnut is always in the wines of Lapio, lime, flint sometimes, flowers, wild herbs. And if it's very ripe, you'll get more on the tropical side with honey and beeswax and things like that. But Lapio is really the big place for Fiano in Avellino. That's not to say it's necessarily like the best or it's going to be your style. It is kind of, I would say, the most typical or the most iconic or whatever you want to call it. Then there's Montefredani. So these wines, if you get a wine from Montefredani, when they're young, kind of reminds me of Semillon. They're harsh and acidic and they don't have as much aroma. But with age, they will start to smell like incense and flint. This is the hilly area in the east around Avellino. Hazelnut notes, really delicious wines, but you have to wait. They require patience. San Michele di Sarino and Cesinali, these are not as rich as the wines of Lapio. The grapes are growing on rock and limestone marl, which is limestone with clay, and some north-facing vineyards, so you'll get things with higher acidity. They're fragrant and floral. They are lighter in style than the wines of Lapio. With age, they're going to become smoky and flinty, less nutty, more smoky and flinty. Then you have Candida and Montefalcione. Actually, Montefalcione is known because Donna Chiara, which is one of the larger producers in the area, is there. High elevations, cool climate, incredibly acidic grapes, clay soils, some calcareous rock. It's better in hot years. I find that Donna Chiara's Fiano is a little light for me, frankly. I just think that it lacks some of the flavor that you're going to find of the wines from other regions. So if you like that lighter style, Donna Chiara is good for you. If not, I did go visit them on my trip. Although the Aglianicos were nice, the Fiano was just a little bit too light. Not my style, I'll just say that. Then we get into two areas that I really, really like. Very different styles, again, from Lapio. You have Salsa Irpinia. Salsa Irpinia is where Roberto Di Meo makes wine. And the thing that I love about the wines of this area are that they are like chamomile tea. And seriously, straight up, I'm not kidding. They taste like chamomile tea. There's some Rieslings that taste like that too, by the way. They're softer. With age, they become very full and rich. And Roberto Di Meo, I talked about him already, about the various aging techniques that he uses on Di Meo's wines. And you see that from this area, the age really benefits Fiano because they do get softer and fuller with time. When they're younger, they still are pretty, but with time, they really age well. Sorbo Serpico, which is where Feodi di San Gregorio is. Sorbo Serpico is the crew of Feodi di San Gregorio, and it's totally different. The soil types are completely different. It's heavy clay. They don't really have a lot of pumice or volcanic soil. Sometimes those wines... And this is really just from their single vineyards because they buy grapes from all over the place. So if you just get a regular Feodi di San Gregorio, it's not coming from this area, but they're incredibly herbal. And actually their winemaker says that it can be like green pepper and those methoxypyrazines sometimes in the Fiano, which is interesting because that's definitely not the style that you would expect. I think in one of their Feodi Studi, their individual vineyards that they vinify separately and make like 2,000 bottles of each just to show the effects of terroir, that I did have one from Sorbo Serpico and it was very interesting. I like the fuller style, but really interesting. And I think in warmer years, Sorbo Serpico does a little bit better. And I like those herbal qualities. There's also an area called Parolise, which is mostly sand. So those wines can be very light. Then you have Sumante, which is in the northwest part of the Appalachian. It's in the foothills of Mount Partinio, which is a very high mountain in this area. And those wines are powerful and fruity, a little bit more clay. The very famous producer Ciro Picariello is there, and a lot of people really love those wines. The harvest is 2 to 3 weeks after Lapio. Very high elevation, clay, some volcanic rock, cool climate. So you see, as I'm describing these, I don't really care whether you remember these or not, but some are like chamomile. You know, Sorbo Serpico is more herbal, sometimes even like methoxypyrazine. Some are fruitier, some are more floral. Some age well, but aren't great in youth. I think it's just important to show the many sides of Fiano. This really has to do with sight. One thing that I have read just in one or two places is that, oh, Fiano is all about winemaking. But that is not true. And even Roberto Di Meo, who really focuses a lot on aging and holding those wines for a long time, would say that the terroir is the number one thing when it comes to Fiano. I think it's important just to go over that again. No need to memorize it. Other areas, there's a ton of other areas in Avellino that are not in those subzones that are just outlying. And also in Irpinia in general that are high and cool. And the crazy thing about Fiano is that it can do very well in these high and cool sites, but it also does great in the low and warmer sites in Campania. For instance, in Cilento, which is on the coast, the Cilento DOC is mostly Fiano with Trebbiano, Toscano, Greco, Malvasia, some other grapes. It's warm. You can still get a lovely Fiano from Cilento, even though it is going to be very different from the wines of Campania, which will have more acidity and maybe more complexity. The Sangio DOC is allowed to be up to 50% Fiano, and this is also in Campania. Again, it's a little bit warmer. You have lots of different sites, and it's a blend. You'll have some different notes there. And there is also Irpinia Fiano, which is from the whole wider area. You can taste that. That's more of a holistic look at Irpinia. It's a little bit harder to determine, okay, well, that's from a cooler site or a warmer site. It's a blend of a bunch of things. Other parts of Italy, Puglia is definitely improving. And then we see in Sicily, the big producer who's doing Fiano is Planeta. They have a wine called Cometa, comet, planet, comet. It's fantastic. It doesn't taste like the wines of Campania because it doesn't have the acidity, but it has echoes of it and it is delicious. It's a little pricey, but it is an amazing expression of Fiano. And if that's something of interest to you and you want to compare the ones from Campania where the acidity is going to be higher, they might be a little bit lighter or livelier, and Cometa, which is big and bold, but still very delicious and very nutty, you could do that. There's some other smaller areas, but in Italy, really the main places for Fiano are Puglia, Sicily, and then of course Campania. Where else? Australia. cuttings first came to Australia in 1978. Australia has a very long history with Italian varietals. They are really embracing it now, which I love, because they had a lot of Italian immigrants, which I think is not a story, unless you live there, that I think a lot of us are familiar with. Most of the story of Australia that people know is, oh, well, it was a British penal colony and there were prisoners and then there were rich people and yada, yada, yada. But the fact is that there were a ton of Italian immigrants, and Italian wines and Italian varietals are well esteemed in Australia, maybe looked on as more high end than they are in the US, where I think we have always tended to say French wines are the pinnacle and Italian wines are second. I think in Australia, they look at Italian wines as good as or better. So the first cuttings came in 1978, and the Chalmers family and Coriolis made their first varietal wine from Fiano in 2005, so almost 20 years ago. And what they've found about Fiano, it's been bumping around for a while, but as the climate has warmed and it's so very difficult to grow white wines that maintain their acidity in that warm climate, you've got Fiano, which can adapt to warm climates. Now, that being said, it can also grow in cooler climates, as we said before. So it's very popular in Adelaide Hills, which is in South Australia, on cooler sites. So you'll get a different style there. The style can be like Sauvignon Blanc, what I was mentioning before about the pyrazines. You can get that if it's cooler, or it can be very full and rich. They are tending to pick it a little bit earlier. The Fiano I have had from Australia, and I've only had one, I felt like they did not allow it to get ripe enough. So they're experimenting. I think in warmer climates, they don't want it to be over the top, but maybe a little bit more ripeness might be helpful, at least from the version that I had. There's a lot of potential here, different from Italian versions. I know I only had one, so there are lots more. I think the interesting thing is that Australia is erring on the side of lean and very herbal versus Italian wines. The Fianos are a little more plush and lush. So you have Chalmers, you have Coriolis and McLaren Vale, you have Jericho, Bellandian Estate. There's lots of people that are growing and making great wines in Australia. California, you only have a couple of producers. There's a pocket in the Russian River Valley, another one in the El Dorado AVA in the Sierra foothills. And in Argentina, they're starting to grow it in the La Rioja district, which is north of Mendoza. And they're having some promising results there. Again, a very long and deep history with Italian immigrants in Argentina. So that should come as no surprise that they are experimenting with Italian varietals and with Fiano specifically. I mentioned producers, you know, I've mentioned various producers, but just if you're looking for good producers in Campania, Ciro Picariello, Colli di Lapio, Mastro Bardino, Fiori di San Gregorio, Taradora, De Paolo, De Meo is amazing, Petilia. So there's lots of great producers in Campania. Sicily, I mentioned Planeta, the Cometa wine, very nice. In Puglia, if you're looking for a Puglia version, Conti Zecca and Morella is another one. Pairings. If we're thinking about what to pair with Fiano, well, unfortunately, the answer is going to be, it depends. Because if you have a wine that has that snappy acidity and that's very light, then you're going to want to have it with lighter, fresh seafood. You might want to have it with fresh mozzarella cheese. You can have it with salads. You can have it with lighter fare. If you get one of the richer wines, then you're talking more about maybe prosciutto, fried seafood, vegetable tempura, maybe whitefish in a cream sauce, pasta primavera. Things like that will go very well because there's acidity, but you have this nice full body. And it's great with softer cheeses too, especially mozzarella or burrata. I think it's a great pairing, especially some of the more flavorful styles. But it depends, right? It's going to depend on the styles. We just talked about so many different styles. On the leaner side, like with a Donna Chiara wine, you're going to want to pair it with things that you'd pair Sauvignon Blanc with, maybe even Chèvre or asparagus, and spicy food for the lighter styles. On the heavier side, where you're going to get more flavor and have something richer, you'll do the mozzarella or burrata, prosciutto, serve it. It depends on the style. So you're going to maybe do 8 degrees Celsius for the lighter styles, 10 degrees Celsius for the heavier styles. That's about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So that is Fiano. It is becoming easier to find it and to get it. I highly recommend it. I recommend it almost every time we do a roundup. Why is that? Because if we do one in the summertime, I can tell you to get one of those lighter styles. And if we do one in the wintertime or the fall, I'm going to tell you to get a heavier style. It is a wine for all seasons. It is a wine for all palates. It's also a wine that I tell people, look, if you got somebody who doesn't love white wine, get one of these richer styles and give it to them, and they will probably really like it. It is a wine for so many people. It is absolutely irresistible. I will see some of you in the White Wines of Italy class and we will go over this, but Fiano is a classic, unbelievable wine. I'm so glad it's finally getting its due. I have loved it from the minute that I tasted it very, very long ago, and I think many of you will enjoy it too. So I hope you'll go out and get it and definitely check out some of these well-known producers because they're doing great work, and have maybe one or two and see how the styles differ. Definitely pay attention to how they're describing the wines and maybe even to where they're made, and that'll give you a clue as to the style you're going to get. Either way, you can't go wrong with Fiano. It is so delicious. Have I advocated for the grape enough? I think so. Obviously, I totally love it. All right, another one in the grape mini series book. And with that, this has been another episode of Wine for Normal People. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.